Hello, Martin here. Thanks for tuning in to this bonus edition of an A to Z of UK TV drama. In this episode, Andy will be interviewing Carolyn Seymour about her memories of playing Abby Grant in Survivors. Carolyn studied at the Central School of Speech and Drama before joining the company of the Theatre Royal Windsor and winning roles in several West End productions. Her TV breakthrough was in the popular BBC drama Take Three Girls, in which she played Jenny, one of the girls of the title, in the final two series. Film roles followed in Gumshoe, Unman, Wittering and Zigo, the big screen Steptoe and Son movie, and The Ruling Class opposite Peter O'Toole. Just prior to Survivors, she played Lady Brooke in ATV's landmark historical drama Edward VII. After Survivors, Carolyn guested in Space 1999, Return of the Saint and Hazel. After moving to the United States, she made appearances in most of the big shows of the time, Heart to Heart, Family Ties, Remington Steele, Cagney and Lacey, Magnum PI and so on. Her later roles in Star Trek The Next Generation, Star Trek Voyager, Babylon 5 and Quantum Leap introduced her to a new generation of genre fans. After a period of voicing characters in many popular video games, including the Mass Effect series, Carolyn returned to the UK and began to appear in a number of audio dramas for Big Finish, including, from 2014, her joyful return to the role of Abby Grant for 33 more episodes of Survivors, alongside her great friends Lucy Fleming and Ian McCulloch. Andy spoke to Carolyn last week, and here is that interview.
I'm thrilled and so excited to be joined by Carolyn Seymour today, who played Abby in Survivors. Good morning, Carolyn. How are you doing?
Morning, darling. Morning, morning, morning. Morning, everyone. I'm well. I'm really well. It's sunny at last, so that's lovely. It's the day of the election, which for me was a success. I'm sorry if it wasn't for anyone else.
It's odd if it wasn't a success for anyone else at this point, really.
Well, our village has remained staunchly Tory, so maybe they're not so happy.
Yeah, same as my town. But I was reflecting, the last time I interviewed you was in 2003, and it was under a Labour government.
Was it really? Yes, it was. But I didn't care about politics in England very much then, because I'd spent so long in America, and it didn't occur to me.
Wasn't it terrifying? Now, the question I've been dying to ask you to kick the interview off, and that is, and I hope it's not a trifling question, because it could be taken in that way, but I'll ask it anyway. When the pandemic kicked in, when COVID really hit the UK, was there any point where you ever thought, oh gosh, you know, how much of this could impact me in a way that it impacted Abby? And did you ever think, oh, I'm in that world? Or did that not occur to you in those moments?
Oh no, it did. As it got darker and darker. I was in France where they were a lot tougher. They were really tough. I mean, there were fines and curfews and all of that sort of stuff. My dogs kept escaping, and my sis and I would spend our lives driving around the countryside without our lights on, trying to find our dogs. And it got really, really serious, because a couple of my friends hauled off and fined mightily for being out after 9 o'clock, and we were driving around at midnight looking for these dogs. And they always came home on their own, so it was futile. But we were crossing main roads, and, you know, it was really quite, I mean, I sort of had a feeling we went back to sort of resistance during the war. And we would often talk about how similar it was to Survivors, and could we, and Pippa, my sister, is a sort of, she's a real country woman. So she would survive and be the perfect person to have on the tribe. You know, she does all that thing from you know, she can kill things, gut them, skin them, and do it. I can cook them, but she'll do the hard work. We'd survive.
You'd survive, yeah. How much would you naturally become a leader in that situation? Because Abby's such a strong leader, and it feels like so much of that in your performance comes from you. Is that true? Is that a part of you, to lead?
Yes. Yes, I think it probably is. I mean, I love delegating, but I'm pretty stubborn about things. I'm pretty clear about and loud about how I you know what would be a good plan of campaign. But I do listen to people. I'm not that hard-nosed.
No, but it's a stubbornness that comes from having worked out a way, isn't it? It's not just being stubborn for the sake of being stubborn.
You've got an overview of what's happening, and you can see, you know what's best. I think, you know, the one thing that she always did was what she felt was the best for everybody that was there, best for the community, and was very clear about that. And I do a lot of that sort of stuff. I mean, I'm very hip to that, but she was very strong, and she was particularly seen as strong and bolshy, you know, at that period of that time. I mean, in the 70s, we weren't allowed to be bolshy.
Yeah, so I wanted to dig into that a bit more, because you essentially suffered massive sexism in that sense. And was that to do with the entirely male crew? I mean, there was no women writers or directors, obviously.
Well, we had to fight harder. I mean, every actor at that time, every female actor, actress, as I would have called them, suffered greatly. We were objectified from the minute you walk on the set, and you just had to develop a kind of thick skin about it if you wanted to work. You know, and the 70s was the period when most of my friends were appearing in films and on TV, half nude and or nude, but the men never were. No. And you know, we had that was page three. That was all of those things that we fought terribly hard to get rid of, but we were objectified. It was absolutely true. And Lucy just was oblivious to all of that, or she just quietly put her foot down and just said, uh-uh. It was a really difficult time, because if we'd had the internet then that we do now, if we'd had the trolls, we would have been crucified, the girls that you know, because I did a lot of movies where I stripped, I mean, even in Steptoe and those sort of things, you know, that was a horrible, horrible, horrible time. And to have a female producer who let me down that badly was appalling. And she did behave appallingly.
Yeah.
It was just a battle we had to fight. And we all of us knew that if we were going to go into this business, that was what we were going to have to deal with.
Yeah. Yeah.
And unless you were that awful character actress, which just meant that you didn't fit the norm of beauty, but were a great actor. You know, they. I mean, my chums who did those wonderful parts and were probably much better actors than any of the beautiful ones. You know, they. Some of them managed to get away with not having to deal with the furtive grabs and gropes and things in the BBC club.
So the objectification aside, it was also the sexism, surely, that also made people describe you as difficult or outspoken, when in fact you were just standing your ground. Yeah.
Of course, and we had the bastion of that awful sort of quasi upper class, middle class, whatever snobbism, which was dear Mr. Dudley, who hated me.
Hated.
Yeah. He was heard to say once that he hated me. So. He couldn't wait to get rid of me, and he managed.
Yeah, yeah.
And also, I mean, Abby, you know, we needed that tripod of Ian and Lucy and myself. Yeah. We needed that desperately, because Lucy and Ian were not as fleshed out or as powerful.
No.
You know, I mean, Abby was capable of being very powerful without pouting, you know, and Greg was known to have the odd pout or two. The odd flare up, and Lucy just got on with it, put her head down, as Lucy does, the darling girl, and just, you know, and Jenny just put her head down and got on with life, you know. But you needed me, you needed that character.
Well, the way I look at it, I mean, this perfect triad, as I think you described it to me when we've met years ago, was the fact that Abby has so much fire, Ian is practical and gruff, and then Lucy is much more of an every woman, gentle, I guess slightly traditional, old style female character. So why did that perfect triad work so well?
I think because we just loved each other and we had great chemistry, all of us. We adored each other and still do.
Yeah.
You know, and it was a very tough shoot. There's no denying. We worked our tushies off doing that. We did things that we'd never done before. We had long, long days. We had difficult scenes to shoot, uncomfortable. And emotional, a lot of the times, very, very emotional. We all had countryside backgrounds, which was good. We'd all grown up.
Oh, I didn't know that. Yeah.
So we were all comfortable with you know, ploughing around in mud and wellies and falling over, you know, making things work and gardening and all of that stuff. We had lots of reference points, which a lot of the crew didn't. So it was, you know, with the props guy and the rabbits blowing up.
Yeah. So, I mean, I was going to ask you about the location of filming. So you felt comfortable in the countryside, but because of the pattern of filming was you started in the winter and you went through into the summer. Mm-hmm. It was very tough at first, yeah?
Yeah. I mean, I my darling dresser, Alice, who was she was my touchstone during all of that, because she took great care of me and she took great care of the children when they came up. And she often we were shooting in snow on a ploughed field. And when we wrapped, you know, she had these voluminous pockets, and she had a G and T, and she, and for ice, she just bent down and threw some snow in my drink. And that's how we went. Oh, but she always had a small shed and a small car.
That's brilliant.
She was a godsend, but she just used the snow, and we used what we had.
On the issue of dressing, were there any costumes that you had, any outfits that you liked or remember?
No, not really. They were basically boys' size 12 jeans, which I then had my stepson. And, you know, and his sweaters, really. I mean, I was very thin, if you notice.
Yes.
I was terrible.
Incredibly. Yes. And I guess, would that have been, I guess that was quite useful plot-wise, in the sense that there was less to go around, in the sense that, you know, it would make sense for people not to be. But,
well, I'd already done a movie where the producers decided I needed to lose a lot of weight.
Uh-huh.
And so I already wasn't acceptable size wise, you know, and I was a 34, 23, 34, which was quite a nice figure, and ended up going down to a 32, 17, 33, which is why I was a boy's size 12. And then I didn't eat forever. So, you know, I wasn't eating on that show.
So how did you keep going if you weren't eating?
I was drinking.
Right.
And that was Dudley's excuse for firing me.
Uh-huh. Yeah. So can we dig into Dudley a bit more? Because it's so interesting. At the heart of this show, there's this conflict between the creator, Terry Nation, and you've got Terry Dudley, who was the producer. They didn't get on. And then Dudley carried on for another two series and... yeah, had his own ideas. It fascinates me that Nation decided to create the character of Abby as the lead. It was going to be a female-led series, and that was key. Do you think Nation fully believed in that? I mean, we think that Dudley didn't because of what happened effectively in terms of his lack of support.
Dudley didn't because he was from that type of guy. He was indoctrinated. But, you know, women should be seen, you know, they should be at home doing the cooking, taking care of the children, and the men went out to work. And women were useless and didn't have brains and all of that. Right? And he was worse than most people. I mean, he was really bad.
Yeah.
nation. Terry, I think, Terry believed in women. He was a feminist. He believed in women. He believed in our power, and he that's how he wanted it. And it's very different in the right. book, but that's how he wanted it. And the women were given a lot of power in Survivors. We really were. We all of us were strong women. You know, even the beautiful ones who sort of came a cropper, but they were still strong and determined. Behaved in ways that most women would not have been able to behave in real life. So he was a feminist. I think he, you know, right. he was a feminist. So, and that's why Dudley yeah. didn't like him, because I think they had conversations where Nation really didn't understand what Dudley was talking about. You know, what do you mean women should be, he had that covert sort of chauvinism going on.
Yeah.
Probably misogyny.
That was, yeah. Yeah, yeah. No, it makes sense.
Yeah.
It makes sense.
Yeah, yeah. No, I mean, because he was too clever.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. So did you feel like the storylines supported the character to be strong and a woman in charge? Or I guess they started strong for Abby, but did you feel that was maintained? Or?
No, but no, it was watered down. I mean, it was watered down. We did have, we had some issues. It was a long time ago, darling, so I was a wee yeah. bairn. I did fight. I mean, I suppose I was a bit tough for him, because I did fight very hard for what I thought Abby's position would be. I mean, particularly in the capital punishment one. He wanted me to flatly agree to, and it was torture for me. I mean, it kept me awake at night.
Yeah.
Then it was interesting because when you took a sort of consensus of the crew, you know, and everybody around me, it split exactly that way, which was quite interesting. It was quite hard. But I realized, I did realize that I wasn't, I hate to say this, but I wasn't creating a breakthrough in science. I was merely performing a part, and some of the fights mm-hmm. just got too unpleasant. I just couldn't do it with Dudley anymore. I had Pennant at my back always, but
right,
I love that man. What a space.
Oh, Pennant was soft, lovely. Yeah.
Lump. I loved him. He was so clumsy. He was so clumsy, but he was. Yeah, but he was the gentlest soul. And he and I,
yeah,
we had a real friendship. I mean, a deep thing. We had such a good connection, and we could have spent years just talking together. It was just wonderful.
Oh,
he was a wonderful, bright, sweet, gentle creature who hated what Dudley was doing.
Yeah.
Hated it.
Right. That's so fascinating. Yeah. Because I got to know Pennant quite well through writing the Survivors book I wrote back in the day. And then later I got to hear so many stories from actors, female actors who had worked with him on Tenko, because he started off that series.
Yeah.
And they just all adored him because he understood women. And
he loved women. He adored us too, you know. And he never inappropriate, never a weird moment, you know. And
sure.
We trusted him. I trusted him. And I was so I was so grateful that I got him. Me and Gerald, and they were lovely, but I was glad. For me, Pennant was the best.
Yeah. And of course, you got to work with Louise Jameson on the Big Finish Survivors, and she was also a massive proponent of Pennant. She said she owed her career.
That woman is the hardest working woman in the business. She's also written one of the audios that we did, one of the shows we did, was one of the best shows I've ever done. And she wrote it. And I soared on that. I just loved doing her episode. She's a brilliant woman. She's brilliant.
Yeah.
Gorgeous.
Yeah.
Talented, fabulous, totally self-effacing, gets on with it, busy as anything, massive energy, and super bright and a good charm.
Yeah. Yeah, I've worked with her on a few things.
Oh, she's amazing.
Over the years. Yeah, yeah. So I wonder whether you know, because I couldn't find it anywhere, and I'm about to revisit rewriting the book I wrote 20 years ago to give it a new post-pandemic lens and bring in the feminist agenda and lots of other things I'm more interested in now. And one of the questions I had about Louise Jameson is that she was up for one of the roles in Survivors, one of the leads back in the day. Was it for Jenny or was it for Abby? Do you know?
I have no idea.
Ah, okay.
Maybe it could have been for Abby.
Yeah.
In the first series.
Yeah. Yeah.
She would never have been. Yeah. She was too strong for Jenny.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Anyway, yeah. Can I take you back to Hampton Court?
You can try.
In Herefordshire. Yeah. What are your memories of that place?
Not many, I have to say. Not many.
Oh, not many.
I mean, we loved working there, but it was, I had children. I was crazy busy, and a husband who'd gone away to America, and I was alone with the kids and managing the house back there.
How did you do it? How did you do it?
Well, that's what we did. One just did, you know. And then I got pregnant on the show, which you can see by the fact that my shirts don't fit anymore.
Yeah. Oh, could you tell the story of when that happened, and in terms of the, because it related to a script, didn't it?
Corn Dolly. It was Corn Dolly, and we none of us really believed in it, but. You know, the theory is that you make a corn dolly and you put it under your pillow, and it's supposed to be a fertility symbol. So we all of us, and there weren't very many women on the crew, but there was the scene where we're making them, and then we put them under our pillows. And literally 10 days later, everything changed. And all these, the women, I think all bar two became pregnant because of this little thing. This powerful little creature that lived underneath our pillows on the new moon.
Yeah.
And that was scary. Yeah. That was scary because, you know, it was a whisper that I could have got pregnant, and I did. And so did Lucy, and a makeup person and a hair person, I believe. And there was one other.
Yeah.
It was a bit scary.
Bizarre.
It was almost the Immaculate Conception for all of us. We were all so busy that we literally sort of got home at, you know, 11 o'clock at night and then left the house at 5.
wasn't time for any of that.
We all of us going, hello. But anyway, and Lucy and I, our tiny little shirts that we wore in those days just started getting more and more taut as the show went on, the last few shows.
Yeah. What are your thoughts now about how white and middle class Survivors is?
It's a pity, you know. Yeah, but that's easy to say in hindsight. It just, there were very few. There was very little diversity in acting in those days. There was very little, and it would have been hard to find people to join us on the, you know. As Survivors, it would have, I mean, of course it wouldn't in a way, but even at my drama school, we had very little diversity. And that was what was so extraordinary, is that there were loads of people of colour wanted to work, you know, and sing and do all of that. Why weren't they there? Why were we so white and middle class? I mean, we're horribly middle class. We're all sitting there talking, hello, you know, everybody, just... I can't bear it. I can't bear listening to it. I can't.
Really?
No.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's the way it was. And I'm thrilled that it's changed.
Yeah. So I've been watching Survivors again for the first time in years with my partner, who's never seen it before. And he has become gripped. He's watched 5 episodes. We watched Gone to the Angels last night. And he's absolutely gripped. He's got no idea what happens. Totally in love with your character.
But isn't that lovely? Isn't it? I mean, you know, I did watch it on YouTube, a very grainy version on YouTube. I mean, I've got the CDs, the new ones, and I've got the old one. But I did watch it on YouTube, me bouncing about trying to hit the ball, looking totally inept. But the story still, it does get you. It still holds up, and it's terrifying.
Yeah.
terrifying. The I meet a lot of people who were terrified, whose childhood was destroyed by that series.
Mm.
You know, who then go out in the dark and, you know, cling to big church doors and things and won't go. I mean, they're terrified.
Yeah. It's the appeal is enduring, and I wasn't as convinced of that until he's like, he's lapping it up. He's like, oh, this is amazing. How come I never knew this show existed, you know?
Well, I think it was too scary, even though they put it on. I mean, even with Doctor Who, which was terrifying in those days.
Yeah.
You know, I still think this was probably because it was the unseen enemy.
Yeah.
I mean, people, my daughter has suffered with COVID. I mean, she's never had it. But it has destroyed her mental health. You know, my daughter has a complete terror of, and she somehow feels that she's the only person she's the receptacle of all the COVID germs. So that's why she can't see her sick father, and she can't go and see her disabled stepbrother because she will give them this horrible disease that she has absolutely no symptoms.
Oh, I see.
And that's a common based on COVID. Yeah. So it wasn't out of order, you know, for us to have been quite so paranoid about people.
Yeah. So I watched a video with you and Lucy on YouTube where you were talking about survivors today still having its relevance and potency. Could you speak to that a bit more about why perhaps it's even more relevant today?
Well, the thing that I think is fascinating about today is that people are so less self-sufficient than they were in those days. Nobody knows how to really light fires or catch animals or you know, hunt and fish and cook. People don't know how to cook. Mm. Yeah. And they don't know how to sterilize water, and they don't know the basic first aid things. They don't know CPR. They don't know any of this stuff. I mean, this is maligning in a huge swathe of people. But on the whole, if we lost the ability to communicate like this, if we lost the ability to follow the stars, where would we be? I mean, if COVID had completely crashed everything, if there was, God forbid, a dystopian sort of horrible, horrible war right now, how would we survive? There are no plans for it. There's no contingency plan. Nobody's got a B, C, and a D, which we need. I mean, there are the wonderful people who have the bunkers still in their houses or built them, the safe room.
Yeah.
But you can't live in a safe room forever. You can't.
No.
And how do we meet family members? How do we communicate with them? Who does... It would be tricky.
And would you personally want to survive?
Well, I'm too old. I don't care now. I'd save the people that I thought, you know, I could help. But you know, I don't mind. I've lived a great life. I mean, I'm 77 this year, so.
Oh, you don't look it.
Well, I certainly feel it, darling, in the morning. But anyway, it's you know, that's it's the truth. We're all quite old.
Yeah.
So it doesn't matter. I think that's what's happening is that it's a form of culling. Is that you know, these diseases are coming. You know, somebody's.
Yeah.
And it's horrendous.
Yeah.
And nature, what nature is doing right now.
One thing that I found that I hadn't seen before was a Radio Times letter from 1977 at the end of when survivors finally stopped going out in 1977 after Series 3. And a viewer wrote in and said, "This was all very well, but what about restoring that blood and guts girl, Abby? Now there is a survivor if I ever saw one." So...
Who is that?
I don't know, but this guy wrote in saying... Whatever happened to her? We should have her back. If we're going to have survivors again, then we need Abby back. And so back in 77, that was, I thought it was fun to read that.
That was nice. Thank you for that. Good.
Yeah.
Dudley was still going strong, so.
So it wasn't going to happen.
Oh, no, he would never, he wouldn't have ever worked with me again if he could avoid it.
Yeah. So where does survivors sit in terms of your... extensive career in TV and film. Is it a good place? Where does it rank?
Oh, it's an amazing place. It's paid me back in countless ways. And it was, you know, people think that Steptoe was my pinnacle, but that was not. It was my least favorite job ever, and very difficult, and all of those things, and I was appallingly treated. Survivors, I was not appallingly treated, despite Terence Dudley, because I had Pennant in my corner. We created this triad of you know, Ian, Lucy, and myself, which has been immensely enriching throughout all my life. They were sensible scripts, they were sensible stories, and it was good old honest TV. It was good entertainment. And for that, we you know, the Brits have always succeeded in that, and that's what we got was great TV. And I'm very proud of it. I'm very proud of it. And then there's the whole other family doing it in Big Finish and having all of that.
Of course.
And I'm immensely proud of it. I love it. I was so glad that it was that you got me in touch with David Richardson. I mean, it was as simple as that. It was, and you're responsible.
Oh,
well, you are.
I just knew where you were. That's
but
all.
I would never, and you told me who to get in touch with. I would never have known, sitting in my 17th century house in you know, farmhouse, staring at trees.
It's been a total joy to talk to you today for the podcast. Thank you so much for your honesty, for your opinion, and for the strength that we love in Abbey. And yeah, just a pleasure to go back down memory lane with you today. Thank you so much.
Loved it. You know where I am, so just come by.
I will.
We'll do it. Okay. All right, my darling. Much love.
Thank you. Thank you, Carolyn.
Okay. All right.
Thank you.